Can you talk?
I don't have to interview, sorry.
Shall I say something so you can yell the mic is picking it up? All right, let's see. You want to turn it back on? Let's find out how it's picking it up from there. This is getting to be a regular kind of a thing for me. I think it's the third year in a row that I'm coming talking to the eighth grade about that. And one of the reasons that Mrs. Buxbaum asked me originally, and I think most of you know because we mentioned before, that I myself am an immigrant. I came over here as a very young boy with my parents. But I was an immigrant and lived in a place where immigrants settled and was a direct participant of immigrant life in our country. But before we talk about immigrants and immigration, we ought to get an understanding, it ought to be clear that no historical change, no great movement, no revolution, actually no great historical change took place just by itself out of thin air. There were always reasons for things taking place. And before we go into the immigration and the coming of the immigrants to this country, and we're going to talk about mass immigration, I just want to call your attention to a number of things that you will bear in mind and that you will think about when we talk about mass immigration, because to that extent then it will become much more meaningful to you. Too often people now in our country, when they talk about immigrants, they think in terms of people who came over here during the mass immigration period that began after the Civil War. They think in terms of Slavs, Russians, Ukrainians, Poles, Czechs. They think in terms of Italians and some other groups. But if you come right down to it, our immigration started. Our history talks about it since 1620, but it started even before that. As we were talking with Mrs. Buxbaum pointed out, that it started even before that, because the Indians who inhabited the area, which is now the United States, also were immigrants. They came from somewhere here. But the building of the state that we know now, the United States, actually is a nation of immigrants. The only ones that we feel are native born were the Indians who had lived here much, much longer. So that you must bear that in mind, because many of the reasons that prompted the first immigrants to come here were also one of the basic reasons that developed into our mass immigration here after the Civil War. Because why did our first immigrants come here? You've learned that they came seeking freedom and opportunity. Be it freedom of religion, be it political freedom, but it was searching for freedom or escaping from oppression. And when they did find the country, came here and landed here, they found out that this country had a great deal of material wealth that could be exploited. They found it was a great, rich country in many things that they could discover at that time, many things discovered later. And that's why we had actual wars over this territory. And the immigrants that came over here came from England, came from Holland, came from Spain, came from France. The Spanish came up from Mexico, up that way through the peninsula. The French also, who were in Canada, who came down. And you remember that there were wars over this country, and these wars were not fought to develop freedom here, but merely to gain control, because it offered such wonderful opportunities for developing power and wealth. So these were the immigrants that came here, and it's important to know that, because these same reasons, economic reasons later, were the basic reasons for so many other immigrants coming over here in great waves and masses. And they too, many of them, we will find out, came also. Because this country, as it was developing after it became the United States, we remember the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, one of the most far-reaching democratic documents that certainly had been written up to that time. So here was a land again that would attract people of freedom and opportunity. So remember, it started that way and it kept developing that way along certain principles. Certainly along the way, certain changes take place, certain freedoms are developed, certain freedoms are curtailed, and as we know, the Civil War came into being because of some of the ways that the country was developing. But remember, they came over here for those basic reasons. And now to the mass immigration that occurred in our country. I want to give you a little background about it. First of all, why did they come here in such great masses? Well, by that time, our country was developing economically very rapidly. And this offered a great deal of opportunity for all kinds of people. It was developing economically very rapidly. There was the expansion, the westward movement, the discovering and the attempts to exploit natural resources. And then in order to do all of these things, there was a rising of industry. Now, an industry had to be serviced. You had to be able to transport these things, which meant you had to have railroads and means with which to transport both the raw material to the factories and the mills, and then from the mills to the places where they were used, either in the form they came out of there or else used to produce other things. All of this needed a great deal of labor, both skilled and unskilled. A good deal of the skilled labor had been coming over with the development of industries in the north. Much skilled labor was coming over because it was drawn on the countries that are already industrially developed, primarily Germany and England is where your skilled labor came from. But as this thing started to grow and develop, and particularly after the Civil War here, then the need arose for a great deal of unskilled labor. Steel mills were being put up. Coal was being mined. Railroads were rapidly being built. For two reasons. One, that the country was expanding rapidly. You had to have means of transportation, of getting from one place to another. Secondly, you had to be able to bring all the things into the mills. The mills at that time were primarily in the north, not many were in the south, because of the way the country developed. So you need a great deal of unskilled labor. Where are we going to get that unskilled labor? You got it primarily from Europe, because the contacts then were with Europe. Where were you going to get them in Europe? Who would be willing to give up the land, the country in which they and their ancestors had lived for centuries, and go far beyond things that they could even comprehend, beyond oceans, where you would travel as much as a month to a strange land where everything that was in that land was strange to them? The language, the customs. True, they knew that earth or land is the same anywhere, and if he's a farmer, he can farm the land wherever he is. But many of them were coming over here not to farm land, but go into industries. And they were in the main not industrial people, they were people of the soil. What would prompt a person to get up and leave his native land? Well, the same old story of looking for freedom and opportunity. And I'll start telling you a bit about one big land area in Europe where great masses of unskilled labor came from. They came from the Slav countries, those that we know now as make up part of the Soviet Union. There's Russia, the Ukraine, Belarusia there. These are Slavic peoples. Mm. Oh, yes. Yes, you see, true, it isn't very big land-wise, is it? But nevertheless, here are the areas that they came from. Here's the Ukraine, here's Belarusia, and here's Russia. And this central part of Europe, and extending almost to the borders of Siberia, this great central area was inhabited by Slavs. Here's Poland, here is Czechoslovakia, and here is Yugoslavia, here is Bulgaria, and these were the great Slav peoples that migrated westward and settled as far west as we now know as Czechoslovakia and Poland and Yugoslavia. And just for a moment, does anybody know what Yugoslavia means? There are no specific peoples as Yugoslavs. It's a combined name, it's a hyphenated term. And actually it means just Southern Slavs, generally speaking. Yugo, Yug in Russian or Slav language means South. So there's
some... The word Slav itself seems to be used for some of them. So you want to discuss for them?
Well, it's S-L-A-V. And these are people that long time ago were kind of nomadic tribes, and they settled in southern part of what is southeastern part of what is now known as Russia, or primarily Ukraine. And the Slavs, as such, therefore, the land was very rich there. There were big rivers and means of transportation there. It was a battleground for many, many centuries. It was invaded by the Tartars, it was invaded by Genghis Khan, and occupied for a long time. Napoleon wanted to conquer it. The Swedes, prior to that, in the 13th century, when there was a constant source of trouble, and because it was a kind of a gateway from Western Europe into Turkey, and from Turkey into Asia, and then through Siberia up into the Far East, constantly going through there. But they finally settled. They were nomadic tribes for a long time. They finally settled in the southeastern part of what is the Soviet Union now, around the Ukraine, and in about 900 BC, or AD already, they developed what they call the Kiev Rus, right on the site where the capital of the Ukraine stands now, the city of Kiev. It's on the banks of the Dnieper River. And from there developed then the Slavic peoples. And they got their identities or their particular characteristic, I said, depending on how much further they went west and how much proximity they had to the nations that developed in the west. For example, the Czechs and the Slovaks use the Latin alphabet in writing. The Serbs use the Latin alphabet in writing. The Serbs are part of the Yugoslavs. The Poles use the Latin alphabet because they're the closest to the Western countries that use the Latin alphabet. The Ukrainians, the Belarusians, the Russians, the Bulgarians, the Croatians still use the old Cyrillic alphabet, which is based on the Greek letters. It is a phonetic language. You write it as you spell it as you write it, and you read it as you see it. But it has the Greek letters, and they've been adapted slightly to Slav. So for a long time, there was this big Slavic nation, then big conglomeration of peoples, and they acquired their own particular identities and have developed in the lines during the centuries as they have now. They were primarily people of the soil. It was not highly industrialized. Serfdom was abolished completely in Russia, Tsarist Russia, in 1861. What took place in our country in, say, 1861, Johnny? Right. What was the Civil War fought over, ostensibly? And what was the figure? Over slavery. So at that time, there were slaves. And my grandfather was born a serf. He was a very young boy when he was born. But my grandfather, my father's father, my father's father, was born a serf. Before he grew to manhood, the serfs had been freed. But the same thing occurred...
500 years ago.
What's that?
I thought that was about 500 years ago.
1860. And just in passing, I've been able to trace my family back just through very cursory conversations. I wish I had opportunity to go and look for materials. We were able to trace it back to 1720. But that's as far back as we could get with it. You'd have to go looking for other documents. I mentioned the serfdom. Let me tell you, you'll understand the status of the people at that time. Just like we still have now the great freedom movement for equality for Negro Americans. When the Negro slaves were freed, freedom is a relative thing. Sure, you are free to starve, you are free to die of cold, or of starvation, or of sickness. The serfs were freed, as were our slaves freed, but the land still belonged to the wealthy landowners. So it was a land-poor nation, and all of these people were land-poor. Sure, as some of the great big estates were broken up, there were ways of acquiring little pieces of land, but never a great deal. Some, of course, were able, through one way or another, if they would work, they would save up a sufficient amount of money. When there's a possibility to buy a little parcel of land, they would buy it. And there grew up some little small landowners, but they were in the vast minority. The overwhelming majority of the people had to work on very small plots, and to supplement their income, they would have to go work on the fields of the landlords. They would go, for which they would get paid a very small amount of money, and they would also go to work on the landlord's lands to pay off for the food that they had borrowed during the winter, because they had never were able to raise sufficient amount of food on the land that they could feed themselves and their families throughout the winter. So they would have to go then borrow from the large landlord, in return for which they would contract that they would work off so many work days during the planting and the harvesting season in the spring and in the fall. What happened then is that during the height of the harvest or the planting, the sowing, they would have to work for the big landlords, and they could work their plots of land only late at night or on Sundays and Saturdays when they didn't work for the big landlord. And if when harvest time came in and there was a need to bring in everything very rapidly, sometimes they could only work at night on their own fields. So when my parents often used to talk about, well, a work day, well, they said it was from dark to dark. In other words, you got up and was ready to work just as soon as it got light enough to work, and you stopped working only when it was too dark to work. And it was only then that you could come home and prepare some food for your family. And by the time that was done, the only thing you could do, or ready to do, was to go to bed so you could get a little bit of rest so you could get up again before sunrise and start this all over again. This is a story of 99% of the people who lived in these areas. Land poor, very, very little opportunity to make sufficient amount of money to purchase more land. And as families grew, this land, whatever little land they were acquired, or the grandfathers or the grandparents were able to acquire, that kept dwindling. Because if a son got married, what could a parent give them? He could give them a little piece of land. And after a while, there wasn't enough land to divide. So that there were some very terrible things took place. People, when they're pressured this way, become brutalized. There would be killings over a piece of land, or they'd be plowing in the spring, because his plow made too wide of a furrow in one place and it got into his little piece of land, very often death resulted from an argument over that. Why should they fight so, feel so strongly about that? Every yard of land he needed because this was his life. If he didn't get some wheat or corn or potatoes from this, he would not be able to survive the winter. Certainly the big wealthy landowners contributes to that. They nurture these kind of things. And these are the kind of people that out of sheer desperation then would come over here, but they would leave. I have some faint recollections, memories of still in the village, but these are kind of pictures that would remain vivid in the memory of a young boy because they were unusual. One of the memories that I have is that I didn't know my father till I was 5 years old, about 4 years old, a little over four. Because when I was 9 months old, my father left home. He didn't leave the family. He left to Germany to work in the coal mines in Upper Silesia. And he had to go there because we couldn't possibly live on the little land that we had. My father came from a family of 6 boys and 3 girls. How much land could his father have had to divide among his 6 boys that they could all make a living out of? So that the older boys, and as they got married, they left. And he went to Germany. And he would come back periodically. They would make enough money to come back that we could buy the necessary things that we needed. And what did we need money for? For salt and matches, primarily. Because the rest of the time we lived on potatoes. My father tells a story, because he's one of the oldest, of his mother waking him at about 4 in the morning, and she had already peeled a big batch of potatoes, and he would rub them on these, what do you call them, that you rub potatoes on? It's not a
grater.
A grater. And rub a bushel full or more, including the blood off the skin of his fingers that he would rub on there. And then the mother would make pancakes, potato pancakes. By that time, then my father would waken the rest of the family. Then they would eat the pancakes for breakfast. Then in a towel or something else, she would wrap a sufficient number of pancakes they could take with them to the fields to work. For lunch, they had cold pancakes, potato pancakes. When they came home for supper, they had a real treat. They had warm potato pancakes with sour cream. That's why a staple in the life of Slavs is potatoes. Potatoes were easy to raise. They were easy to prepare, and they were very filling. Of course, they were very starchy, too. So sometimes when we see people who are living on an unbalanced diet, and yet they look so well-fed, stout, and full. See, this could be due to an unbalanced diet. So that potatoes played always an important part in the life of these people. I know that during my lifetime, I have eaten potatoes prepared in more different forms than you can conceive of. You have baked potatoes, you have boiled potatoes, you have mashed potatoes, you have them with sour cream, you have them mixed with cheese, cottage cheese. You have them covered with fatback, the fatty part from a pig, what we call salt pork. This would be cut up into small little squares and fried and then poured over the potatoes, and that would be your whole meal. And I remember my father telling the story of they often being beaten by their father, my grandfather, or scolded or chastised in one form or another. You didn't have settings, plate settings. You'd have one big dish that was put in the middle of that table. Can you imagine 6 young, healthy men coming out of the field, 14, 15, 16, working all day and sitting down to this hot meal? They didn't have time for it to cool. They would attack it like a bunch of animals. Not only that, if anybody reached from this side to the other side, the grandfather, the grandmother with a spoon, like that. It was almost like a survival of the fittest. My father and mother tells me that they were always hungry. They were always hungry, never satiated. And that's why when they sat down at the meal, brother or no brother, sister or no sister, father or mother, the pangs of hunger can overrule everything. They were willing to risk a whack over the hand, but if he thought he was fast enough and he could get his mouth, then he'd take that whack. Even if he was taking the food out of his mother's mouth or his brother's mouth. I'm citing these things so that you would understand that here were people who knew nothing about geography, who never went to school, most of them. As serfs, they were never sent to school. When they were freed from serfdom, they couldn't go to school. My mother is an illiterate. She could not read or write because she was the oldest in the family, and she had to go out and take care of the fields. She was the oldest. There was no older brother. The brother was younger. He had to go out in the field to work in the field. Just soon as she was old enough, she had to take care of the younger children to free her mother and father to work more in the fields. So she had no time to go to school, and most of these people did not go to school. They didn't know about geography. They didn't know about the United States of America that lay someplace 5,000 miles away with a continent, the European continent, and the Atlantic Ocean in between. So I only cited these in this so you would understand what could prompt a person like this. Leave his family, leave his country, leave the land where his ancestors have always lived, and go, as very often written in our literature and our poems, far beyond what the eyes could ever see, and purely on the blind, take this chance. How did they find out about coming here if they didn't go to school? We had a great need for unskilled labor. Many of the industries, including the coal mines, would send people into these areas and recruit workers. They would pay your passage. When you got here, they said, you will get a job, you will work after, and during the time you're working, we will take out from your wages to pay for the passage. So what happened? They would get some young men, primarily, young husbands or single men. They would come over here. They would go to work, pay off their passage, make sufficient amount of money then to send a steamship ticket, which was called a Schiffskar from the German, to their village and bring over then either his brother or a cousin, and very rarely a very close friend. So through the recruitment and then the people coming here, sending money over, they brought many people over that way. And a mass movement then started to develop to migrate. Not that life here was that well. We'll take it up next week about what the life was here like when they got here. But he had a place, a warm place in which to sleep. He was assured of three square meals a day. And he was able to raise enough money that he was also adequately clothed. Not only that, these were all frugal people. They knew how to live economically. To this day, we often talk, good old with my wife Grace, that we can't seem to manage our household on a lot more money than my mother does now. My mother and father are living on pension. But they know how. Economics, circumstances force them to learn how. They were able to live frugally then, and from the money that they were able to make, they were able to save a sufficient amount of money and bring them over here. That's why we found in this country, why is it that certain nationality groups, up to about the early 1920s, lived in very compact groups in certain parts of the United States, primarily in the northeastern part of the United States. Coal, steel mills, textile mills. These were the big industries. Later, others flowed out of these, but this is where you needed the raw labor. That's why Slavs live in New England, around Boston area, where all the mills are, Lawrence, Peabody, Fall River, these places, in two areas of Pennsylvania, western Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, Johnstown, and around the Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania border, coal mines, bituminous coal mines, and around those grew up the steel mills, and they needed labor. Northeastern Pennsylvania is the anthracite. That's where I grew up. That's the hard coal. These were the big areas the Slavs settled. These are the big areas where the Italians settled. These are the big areas where the Irish settled. These are the big areas where the Welsh settled. The reason that the Welsh settled in the coal mines, there were already coal mines in existence in Wales at that time. Conditions were very terrible, but they were experienced coal miners. So they were more than ready to accept an invitation to come to this country, leave terrible conditions there. Here they were going to go in an industry that they knew. That's why in the town that we settled, Taylor, Pennsylvania, right outside of Scranton, you probably have heard of Scranton, because Governor Scranton comes from there, and Mrs. Johnson just visited that area. If you read about the New York Times, Wilkes-Barre Scranton area, which is a depressed area. It has been depressed for many years because coal mines have been replaced by other means of energy and heat.
Could I interrupt? Did the European countries object to the immigrants coming, and did they do anything to keep them from coming?
No, they did not. They did nothing to it because they, for two reasons. One, that it helped alleviate the difficult conditions there. And they didn't need, they were not highly industrialized, they didn't need all of these people. They were land poor. Secondly, they were glad to get rid of them because anybody who gets pressed hard enough is going to try to do something about it. That's how the French Revolution came into being. That's how the bourgeois revolution arose that broke down feudalism, so that the more of the people who were discontented with life they could get rid of, the greater the chances were that no ferment would occur in that country. So they placed no obstacles for them to leave. Many of them they were glad to get rid of because they were already talking about that we ought to do something about our plight. Glad to get rid of those and glad to get rid sort of the excess of the population because they had nothing to do with them. They couldn't do anything with them and it could only lead into difficulty. So there wasn't. So in my town, for example, it was predominantly Slav, Welsh, and Irish. And this was true in most of the towns in northwestern Pennsylvania. Northeastern Pennsylvania. And in northwestern Pennsylvania, we had primarily Slavs, with some then scattering and smattering of Irish and far less Welsh. It was primarily Slav. There were communities like Monessen, Pennsylvania, that for a long time, not only was it 99% Ukrainian, but it was also 99% of people who came from the same village in the Ukraine. And we had that throughout. 85% of the Ukrainians who lived in Taylor, Pennsylvania, where I grew up, came from the village where I was born. If you think back to what I said earlier, you'll understand how this came into being. They were recruited, they recruited some labor there. They came over here, they worked, and they brought over their brother or their fathers, or fathers brought over sons, and then eventually some of them brought over their wives and children. Not too many, because most of the people that came over here never came over here with the intention of making this their permanent home. That's why even up to this time, we still have many people who came here 55, 60 years ago and are not citizens of this country. It isn't they ever had anything against this country or didn't want to be, but when they first came over here, they came with one hope. They would make enough money here to go back to Europe, to their village, to buy a sufficient amount of land on which they could live the rest of their lives. So that predominantly there were single men that came over here, or married men but came over alone. And that's why when they came over here, they would move into families that were already here. I remember for years, our having six boarders in our house, for whom my mother cooked and washed their clothing. There's a lot of clothing to wash from coal miners. But they came over here with the intention of getting sufficient amount of money, going back, purchasing land, and that they could live there for the rest of their lives.
And did any of them ever do that?
Many of them did. Many, but not any percentage-wise, not a great number did from here. Many more would have done so, but a big historic event took place that put a stop to this. That was the First World War. They were caught here for 4 years. After the World War ended, great physical changes took place in Europe. Many countries came into being that were not in existence. A whole set of countries were put up in Central Europe. This was done arbitrarily, and sometimes in history, if you ever read about the cordon sanitaire that was put up by the Allies, and it was put there to contain the Bolshevik Revolution that had taken place in Russia. The country, most of the people had come from Austria-Hungary, the Empire of Austria-Hungary that was called up the First World War. In that were Poland, parts of Russia, parts of the Ukraine, all of Czechoslovakia, what we know now, all of Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, all of these countries. They only came into being after the First World War. And for many of the people that came over here, they had no country to which to return, because the countries that came into being refused to accept them. Those who came from Austria-Hungary and then wanted to go back to Slovakia, Slovakia said, we don't have room for you and you're not a citizen of Slovakia. There is no Austria-Hungary anymore. If you want to go to Austria or to Hungary and they'll accept you, go ahead, but not back to Slovakia. Then, because they were minorities in many of these countries, there was a period of severe oppression then. The part of the Ukraine that I come from, up to 1939, was part of Poland. A very severe period of Polonization took place there. There were a great deal of resistance, refusal to pay taxes. It reminded me very often of this pre-revolutionary period, where they would send in Polish armies and stuff, literally take a whole village out and beat it to force them to pay taxes or to grow. These people were ready to starve now. So that the avenues of return were closed to many of them. Then they had been here 2-3 years prior to the World War. Then the World War took 4 years. This was already 7 years. They became settled here. Those who had brought their families here had children born here. They had become acclimated. They knew their job. And the desire for many of them to return diminished. There were still many who wanted to go back. And there were any number of families that went back and forth a number of times. Some who had acquired American citizenship during the World War would go back for a period of time to the old country where their families were, or took their families back with them. Then they would come back again by themselves. And many of them, of the young people that I know now, they're not that young, came in here after the Second World War, but only because they had been born here. They were American citizens, were taken back by their parents when they were children, they were able to come back. And the immigration stopped after the First World War, because in 1923, the United States put laws, immigration laws on the books that very severely restricted immigration in this country. By that time, there were powers that felt that we had a sufficient labor force, and with people here, the natural growth of population would provide the labor force that we needed. There were other reasons why they wanted to curtail immigration from certain areas, and one of those areas was Russia or countries bounding Russia, because a Russian revolution had taken place. A new social system had come into being, what we refer to now as the Soviet socialist system, often referred to as the communist system, and our country did not want an influx of immigrants from the countries it used to get, because they were afraid of the kind of ideas they would bring with them. So that was one of the reasons, big reason, that prompted the curtailment of immigration. The other, they felt that we had a sufficient labor force that we didn't need to do it anymore. I think I've given them a picture. I would just want to add this. The same thing that I told you holds true for the Italians. The same holds true for the Irish. These were peasants, land hungry and poor, and even now, Southern Italy is a great big problem economically. There, it's primarily farmland, not too good farmland. The peasants are poor, land poor. There's a great deal of poverty. In northern England, it's highly industrialized, or northern Italy, highly industrialized. Conditions are better. Irish, after the Irish potato famine, here's why a potato famine. Also, a nation lived on potatoes. There was a bad crop, the people were just starving. So they came for the same reason as the Slavs came. They came from typically the same kind of villages that we came from. So I try to give you this kind of little background of who came here and why they came here.
And I think you've done it very well. It's an excellent scholar experience. I hear this every year and I get more out of it.
Now if they have any questions, I know we have to, yeah.
Well, we'll take a couple.
I like, timed it so well, actually.
Fleischer comes in.
Johnny?
You said that after World War I, the immigration laws were enforced and they didn't want people from Russia with new ideas coming in. Well, if they had such good ideas about the communist system, then why should they want to leave Russia?
When a revolution took place in Russia, I don't know whether you know or not, there were some people in Russia who didn't find out about it until 2 years later. It was an awfully big country. It occurred at a time when communication and transportation was not highly developed. It was done, created by a relatively small group of people, by a small party, and primarily in the industrialized European parts of the country, so that not all of these people were for it. They had to go through a great big period when many of them were against it. But the United States wasn't going to sift through and filter through and select. The best way that they could do it is to close the doors to that. Because don't forget, you must remember the other reason that I gave you, that the United States also felt, or the industry felt, they had a sufficient labor force here without recruiting anymore. But these two reasons. Another, do we have time for one more question?
We have one more question. This is right. All right. Did you have one more?
Paul?
Well, that means that nobody else from in 1923, nobody else from another country could come to the United States.
No, that's not true. There were severe quotas placed on many of these countries. The quotas on French and German and English were far more liberal than they were, let us say, on the Slavs, for the Slavs, for the Italians, or some of the others. It wasn't that it was completely closed. They put such severe quotas up that it just, for all practical purposes, there was no more migration. Even those who were born here as citizens, taken over by their parents, had to wait their turn, and they had no problem getting over here, because they were not aliens coming over here. These were citizens coming back to their own country. Even they had to wait for a long time, till the quotas permitted them to return.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Lives in this fantasy world. Is there any comment anyone wants to make on the story? Did you find the story interesting, Joe?
I thought she should.
Well. One of the reasons why I asked you just to tell about it was that the time is up, and since you, as I say, you are going to revise, we have a tremendous, wonderful lot of stories on the way here, and tomorrow we'll spend a good long time at it. Posey, I'll see you sometime today. Yes?
Can I see you about my story?
Yes, I'll try to. I still think the skiing story would be good.
Oh, Captain, hath my your business?
I don't know, you none. Now this was, the last verse was used, usually sung by sharecroppers, because the employer tried to cheat him out of money, and he would say that it isn't any of his business if the money has come in from the sales, because, you know, I don't know, owe you any. Now, there are a lot of interesting words that have been made up to old melodies. From My Country Tis of Thee, I found, I guess someone was being very sarcastic when he wrote these words. He wrote something like,
My country tis for thee, dark land of slavery, for thee
Jericho. And one was made up after, well, after the Civil War.